So I saw a bumper sticker today that said, "Choose joy." And it was on a rusted out minivan that was idling in a thick cloud of its own exhaust, which was even worse because there was no catalytic converter on this minivan. And it occurred to me that we've reached a point in civilization where we just treat our emotions like a cafeteria line. Like you can just slide your tray past the grief and the cosmic dread and just double up on the lime flavored happiness. Now, don't get the wrong idea. I'm a big believer in doing the inner work, developing emotional intelligence and self-awareness, which are things I sometimes discuss in my videos. But unfortunately, a great deal of the positive thinking movement is really just a spiritual pyramid scheme. Every self-help guru with teeth that are, in my opinion, too white to trust, tells you that your life is some kind of dumpster fire. And the reason is simply because you haven't visualized enough fire extinguishers. Now, at best, this is toxic positivity. And at worst, it's an aggressive, I'd say almost violent kind of optimism. I mean, if I hear one more person tell me to manifest my reality, I'm going to start to wonder if they've ever actually met reality. Reality is a cold-hearted creditor. It doesn't care about your vision board. But here's the thing. It isn't just the pressure to be happy. It's this subtle implication that being miserable is some kind of character flaw or lack of discipline. I mean, contentment has been turned into a competitive sport. And if you aren't on the podium, well, then you're just some lazy, emotional athlete. So these days, it's not enough to be depressed or anxious anymore. Now you have to feel like a failure for being depressed. It's so you get a double-decker sandwich of suffering. And we're all being told that you're gaslighted into thinking that it tastes like sunshine or something. So a large portion of wellness has become this mental health industrial complex built on the idea that any negative emotions whatsoever are just software bugs that need to be eradicated in the next update. It's like we want to prune the human experience until it's as smooth and as sterile as a I don't know, a corporate lobby. However, I believe nonetheless that a life without shadows isn't really a life. It's just like a flat screen TV, it has no depth, one dimensional. It's just pixels and light. And eventually, that the bulb is going to burn out or something. And then you're just looking at a black mirror. Now, the problem isn't that we feel bad. The problem is that we've forgotten how to feel bad well. So we are treating discomfort like it's some home invader instead of a house guest who's just there to tell us the truth that we don't want to hear. We try to suffocate our sadness with a pillow of affirmations, and then we wonder why we're gasping for air. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we should all just crawl into a storm drain and wait for the end. I'm not anti-growth. Developing emotional intelligence and self-awareness is probably the only thing keeping us from becoming total, unmitigated disasters. But, you know, the version of self-awareness being sold today is a, well, it's a sanitized a Disneyland version of the truth. It's sort of like trying to understand the ocean by looking at a postcard of a swimming pool. So the real work, the gritty, unglamorous stuff, isn't about finding your so-called inner light. It's about being brave enough to look at your inner darkness without flinching. So Carl Jung had this concept of the shadow. He basically said that everything we deny about ourselves, our rage, our selfishness, our weird little perversions, the parts of us that want to throw our phone into the river and then jump in to retrieve it because we're addicts, these things don't just vanish because we ignore them. They sit in the basement and they lift weights and probably take steroids. And eventually, they're going to break down the door. So Jung famously noted that one does not become enlightened by imagining futures or figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious or visible. But as some of you, I'm sure, know, making the darkness conscious is a fairly miserable business. It's a lot easier to just buy a hand-thrown ceramic mug and talk about mindful sipping or something than it is to admit that you're occasionally just a petty, resentful primate in a suit. And then there's the big one. And that would be the underlying hum of dread that comes with being the only species on Earth that knows and is painfully aware it's going to die. We are, as far as we know, the only creatures cursed with a kind of self-consciousness and awareness to realize that we are temporary. And that is a very heavy and unique weight to carry for a species. This is a topic, by the way, discussed at length in a great book by Ernest Becker called The Denial of Death. So much of what we call positive thinking is really just a sophisticated distraction from the fact that we are all on a conveyor belt heading toward oblivion. And we think that by being what we believe is emotionally intelligent, we can somehow outsmart the existential angst. But honest emotional intelligence starts with the terrifying realization that life is inherently, invariably unstable. We're fragile. We're flawed. And we're destined to lose everything and everyone we love. If your self-awareness doesn't include the awareness of your own mortality. It's not awareness. It's more like a hobby. True self-awareness is the ability to stand in that wind and not pretend that it isn't cold. It's accepting that the dread isn't a bug in the system, it's a feature built into the hardware. I mean, we're all self-aware ghosts haunting biological machines. And once you accept that, the pressure to fix yourself starts to feel a little ridiculous. You can't fix a sunset. And you can't fix the fact that being human is beautiful and tragic. And it's really, you know, we're all on a very short-term lease here. So these days, we live in this culture that that treats failure like some kind of fatal, contagious disease. We're told to, you know, fail forward, which is just a fancy way of saying succeed as quickly as possible so you can stop feeling like some kind of loser. But there's a certain dignity in a good, honest, thorough collapse. And when you think about it, when everything is going right in your life, you don't really learn anything. Because success has proven to be a pretty terrible teacher. It's just confirming your you know, existing biases, and it makes you insufferable at dinner parties or wherever. But failure, on the other hand, well, that's, failure is a truth teller, because it strips away all the pretenses and it shows you exactly where your limits are, and more importantly, it shows you that those limits aren't actually the end of the world. So there's this concept called negative capability, which is a term that the poet John Keats coined. So this is the ability to exist in uncertainties, mysteries, and doubts without, you know, irritably reaching after facts and reasons. Now, most people, they can't hide 5 minutes or handle 5 minutes of uncertainty. They need a plan, a goal. They need, they need a why. They need to know that the plane is landing on time. But life doesn't give a shit about your itinerary. When you stop fighting the failure and the uncertainty, something weird happens. You stop being paralyzed by the fear of it. Maybe you start to develop a kind of humor about the whole thing. You realize that most of the things that you're terrified of, like losing your job or getting dumped or whatever, are just various flavors of not dying. And if you aren't dying, well, then you're still in the game. It's like being in a horror movie and realizing that the monster is actually just a guy in a rubber suit, which might still be a little scary in some aspect, but it's also kind of hilarious once you see the zipper. So we've all been sold this map of life that's about as accurate as a treasure map drawn by a toddler. Now, it's a fairly straight line. You go to school, get the job, find a partner who doesn't annoy you too much. You buy the shit you don't need for people you don't like, and so on. And then what? You win? What do you win? I think a lot of people end up discovering that they're winning at losing. Because goal setting has become some convoluted form of salvation that we're more or less obsessed with these days. And then we treat the future like a ransom note written in crayon. If we just stop the bag, or no, I'm sorry, if we just, you know, drop the bag of achievements at the designated coordinates, we hope the universe releases our happiness unharmed. But the problem with goals is that they're inherently self-defeating. Because if you reach the goal, the satisfaction lasts for about as long as steam on a bathroom mirror. And then you just need a bigger goal to keep the dread at bay. And if you don't reach that goal, well, then you're just a failure in a slightly nicer suit. It's really just a treadmill designed by a sadist. When I think about people who spend their whole lives preparing to live, it's like they're waiting for the perfect moment. When the debt is paid, when the kids are grown up, when the work-life balance finally hits in their favor, you might as well be waiting for the weather to be perfect before you decide to take a breath. So there's this guy, a writer, I can't remember his name right now, who once talked about how we spend our lives trying to build a secure identity. We want to be the successful one or the smart one. But the more rigid your identity is, the more fragile you are. It's like being a tall, rigid oak tree in a hurricane. You look impressive until the wind hits a certain speed, and then you just snap. Now, the people who survive the storm are the ones who are more like weeds. They're messy. They're not self-important. They're rough around the edges. But the thing is they're flexible. They don't have a brand or a five-year plan. They're just there. And I think there's actually a significant underrated power in just being there. Because we're so terrified of being average or nowhere that we've turned our lives into a constant public relations campaign. I mean, even our vulnerability is curated at this point. We share our struggles on social media, but only after we found the right filter to make the struggle look somehow, you know, inspiring. But real life it's not very inspiring. It's usually just a series of awkward encounters and things like mild digestive issues and the realization that you've been wearing your shirt inside out all damn day. And that's okay. I mean, in fact, it's more than okay. It's the only honest way to exist. I think we should all have a museum of failed versions of ourselves. This is a place where you can go and look at all the people we tried to be, but we just couldn't pull it off. The crypto bro version of you from 2021, the yoga enthusiast version, I don't know, the stereotypical version, you know, of you that thought was going to be a rock star or a famous actor. Now, instead of feeling ashamed at, well, of those ghosts, I think we should take them out for a drink. You know, most of our mental suffering comes from this desperate attempt to maintain a consistent self. We want to be a coherent story, but we aren't really stories. Stories have editors, stories have plots, well, that usually make sense. But in reality, we're just a chaotic bundle of contradictory impulses held together by skin and caffeine or whatever. So one day, maybe you're a stoic philosopher, and the next day you're crying because they stopped producing your favorite brand of cereal. Both of those people are you. They're not mutually exclusive. When you stop trying to always be a coherent person, the world gets a lot quieter. You stop performing and you stop checking the metrics of your own personality. And you realize that you don't actually have to have an opinion on everything. You don't really have to, you know, optimize your morning routine. You can just wake up. It's a radical act, really. Just waking up and not immediately trying to conquer or control the world. Maybe the world just wants you to notice the strange poetry in the mundane. Like how the bus sighs as it comes to a stop, or how the fridge hums like it's keeping vigil over forgotten leftovers. That is, if you aren't too busy checking your phone. All right, so what's the fix here? Usually this is where I'm supposed to give you some three-step plan to unlock your potential. But that's just more of the same poison. You know, the fix, it isn't some ladder to enlightenment. It's actually letting go of the wrongs. So here's something I practice fairly regularly. The worst case scenario meditation, which comes straight out of Stoicism. So instead of visualizing winning the lottery ticket, spend 5 minutes imagining that you lose your front teeth in a freak accident, and you have to start a new life as that guy in your neighborhood who can only whistle his vowels. Really feel the draft in your mouth. And once you realize that you can actually survive the whistle, the fear loses its teeth. Pun intended. And then you stop being a slave to the what ifs. Second thing I would consider, embrace the power of being useless. Do something today that has absolutely no return on investment, no networking, no skill building or content creation or whatever it is. Stare at a bug. Walk in a direction that you don't like. Reclaim your time from the productivity police. Finally, I would say just accept the mess and stop trying to curate your consciousness. Hey, life is fundamentally a mess. And if, you know, if you're sad, well, be sad. If you're anxious, just allow yourself to be anxious. Observe it and then let it go. And don't add a second layer of suffering by judging yourself for it. As soon as you stop trying to fix your mood, it stops being a problem and it just becomes like the weather. You know, life is a terminal condition. You aren't going to get out of this alive, so you might as well stop trying to do it perfectly. Go whistle your way to the store and buy a lottery ticket. Or don't. It doesn't really matter either way. And that's perfectly fine. All right. That's all I've got today. Thanks, folks, for watching.